let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Our pleasure to welcome back on This Week in America, acclaimed poet Elizabeth Clayton. Elizabeth began teaching at the age of 20 at the University of Southern Mississippi, now retired and spending her days reviewing and preparing her works for publication. A truly remarkable writing career, dealing with poetry, starting with the release of her autobiographical account, I, Elizabeth, in 2007, a book we've talked about on the program, which chronicles her struggles with bipolar disorder, inducted into the Literary Hall of Fame, Sigma Kappa Delta, in 2012, nominated for the Eric Hoffer Award for her by her publisher in the summer 2013 quarter of Forward Magazine, her work Scarlet Flow, a book we've also discussed on the program, shown in the World Book Fair in London in 2013, receiving the Golden Seal of Excellence Award in 2014. Also in 2014, Elizabeth featured in two New Voices, New Perspectives segments, and Quiet Sheba, a trilogy completed in early 2016. She received, once again, the Golden Seal of Excellence Award from her publisher, and her work, We Lesser Gods, published in the summer of 2016, addendum receiving the Golden Seal of Excellence Award in the summer of 2017. As I say, a very distinguished career. Elizabeth Clayton, author of Chasson de Herald, our guest on today's This Week in America. Elizabeth, it is always a pleasure. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Did I get the title of that right? I took Latin in school instead of French.
You were almost correct. It's chanson. Chanson, which is a French word for song. Chanson or chant. Chanson de Herald. And Harold was a favorite play name of my late husband. He liked knights and honor and fealty and all that sort of thing. And so sometimes we play the game, and he was Harold, and I was Lady Agatha.
Well, I tried to get that correct, and like I said, I took Latin instead of French when I was in school. That was a wrong choice.
Well, you did all right. You did okay.
Well, Latin doesn't come up too often in normal conversation, so I tried to get that corrected. And let's talk about that. This is the result of your memories, most recent memories of the marriage. Talk about this in the older selves, because you just touched on that. Sir Harold and Lady Agatha, that was sort of what roles that you would play with your husband.
Yes, we had a game that we played. Beginning, he always would celebrate my birthday, which was in September, and it was a very fine wine, and he always chose the Chateau Neuf de Pop, and when he wanted to be especially kind and good to me, he would, if he came home in the evening on time, he would say, Agatha, and I'd say, yes, Harold, because I knew what was about to begin. And he'd say, would you like a glass of wine? And I'd say, oh, yes, that would be nice. And he went through all the, he studied wine, or I studied wine and wrote the notes and he read them. Anyway, went through all the business of selecting the wine, and then opening the wine, and then tasting the wine, and then offering it to me. And then we would retire to our sitting room and have a wonderful evening conversation. These are the most wonderful memories that I have left of Richard.
And you capture those so well in the book, Chasson de Herald, and I hope I have that right, The Richard Poems by Elizabeth Clayton. That's C-H-A-N-S-O-N-D-E, Herald. Chasson de Herald. I'll get it. It's a long program. I'll get it before it's over with the Richard Poems by Elizabeth Clayton. Talk about this relationship. It says in the back that this you were fated to live a tragic love story. The two of you were opposites in going through various struggles in each of your lives, weren't you?
Yes, I had just left the hospital for a six-week stay with my bipolar break, and when I met him at a play reading, and he, of course, was already a juvenile diabetic and already had problems with alcohol. And so we were both interested. We were both fine arts, educated, liberal arts, and his favorite subjects were German and philosophy, and he taught those subjects, and I taught literature and psychology. So we had a lot to marry together that was very interesting. And we could not escape our physical and mental limitations, and they eventually grew to separate us.
Well, and it's interesting because as new medicine came along, you slowly got better, but he did not. What pressure did that put on the relationship and the marriage?
Well, what happened was that when I first became ill, there was no treatment for bipolar at that point, and except for tranquilizers. And he took care of me. We lived together for about 3 years, and he did everything but comb my hair. And I was trying to teach, and he'd get me up and get me going and all that sort of thing. And then lithium was put on the market for bipolars by the Drug Administration. And my psychiatrist said, well, you have no choice. You've got to take this. So I took the lithium, and it did help me. It helped me greatly. It helped to straighten out my highs and lows. And so Richard was not able to accommodate to that because he was not needed as a stronger person anymore. And he finally concluded that he liked me better when I was sick.
Our guest on the program once again is Elizabeth Clayton. The book is Chanson de Harold, the Richard Poems. And you'll find it at Amazon along with all the books that Elizabeth has written. And you can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. It's interesting because the death of Richard in 1992, it really didn't end the journey, did it? It began a second phase, and talk about that and turning to poetry to recapture those moments, relive those moments through poetry.
After his death, I learned to love him differently through the years. We were married 22 years before his death, of course, and I learned to love him by caring for him and learning the strength that he tried so hard to master the demons that he had. A lot of his demons went back to his family and to his parents, and also to the family name, the old Southern family, and that sort of thing. And he liked me because he thought I was inferior, although he also liked me because I was at least able to converse with him and enjoy the things he enjoyed. But after his death, I tried to put things in place, and to be quite honest, it was not until many years later, he's been gone 27 years, and it was not until many years later that I finally put him in the tapestry of our lives where I'm comfortable with him now.
How many years did it take to complete the book? This was a process as you were writing?
I think probably about 15 years.
Yes.
I find every once in a while now an old card or something that I've written a small verse on. But the book does have in the main, it has everything that's extant of my verses to him. They're not all love poems. Some of them are rebukes. Some of them are very angry. Some of them are very sorrowful and hurtful. But some of them are truly love poems.
And we'll talk about some of those on the program, that maybe some of your favorites and some that really resonate. And one of the nice things about poetry is we all can sort of slide into that world, and we all will come away with different impressions, different meanings from what you're writing in your poetry. How did your relationship, how did your feelings about Richard changed as you were writing this? I assume you went through different emotions as you were going through this 15-year period of going back and recalling and putting into poetry your thoughts.
I went through a period of discovering him not as a lover, but as an individual, and as a good individual who had flaws that were impossible to be rendered cured, if you want to use that word, in life. There was no help for Richard except death. And his ego strength was so small, really, that as the diabetes became more influential in his physical health, he simply could not do. And I knew that I would become eventually just a compassionate caregiver.
We talked before when we were discussing your autobiography, Dr. John Norton, and he was instrumental, wasn't he, in getting you to write this and to place your husband in the full tapestry, as you describe it, that was woven out as your life. Talk about his role and who he is exactly in your life and how this was important for you to go back and to do this looking
Dr.
back at the life.
Dr. Norton was one of my very dearest friends, as well as my physician. And he told me so many times, you are a very strong woman. You are a very wonderful person to have endured, because my time with Richard was really very sorrowful most of the time. And he said, you've given a great sacrifice. And then he would say, why did you let him do these things to you for so long? And so he held up the juxtaposition to me, and I had to examine it myself. And so what I finally came to realize over these 15 years, 16, 17, was that I did love the part of Richard that first appealed to me, but that I could not ever leave him, no matter how illy he treated me, because he had done so well by me when I was so sick. And so it was kind of a dependency interaction, prideful in
yes.
a way,
did
but
you,
also genuinely caring.
When you went,
I would have died for him if I could have.
Well, yeah, and I sense
so
that
terrible.
Yes. That's you can get that sense as you're reading the book, as you were writing these over a period of time, and your emotions were evolving. Did you learn something about yourself as well?
Of course. Oh yes, of course. Pain is directed toward the self, but there has to be another source there.
Yes.
And when I saw him hurt, and when I saw him try, I hurt. And I knew that that was forming a bond that would never go away. I had to put him away from me, Rick. I had to put him away from me to live and to go on. He is in a place now that is distant from me, where the pain is no longer there. The valediction, the closing of the book, says that. But it made me a more generous person. It made me a fuller person to absorb the pain that I did in caring for him.
In the book, there are no illustrations. Rather, the pictures painted with your selected words. Talk about that process, the decision not to use any illustrations, just words, and how carefully you selected the words.
I think that I felt that my talents, so to speak, were more in the written expression than with the brush. And it's very difficult, I don't know if you know, but sometimes people will come, if you're a painter, people will come to you and say, I want a portrait of this child or whatever, and I'll have to explain to them that it's not going to look like a photograph, it's going to look like a painting. Painting pulls the emotion out of you. You don't have a mechanical means to do it.
Yes.
It comes out of you, and it becomes more, the sentiment is more true. And so that's the reason that I chose not to use pictorial representations of us. There's one picture of us together in the first year of our marriage, and it's at the end of the book. But I chose to use my words because I'm a wordsmith, and I've spent my life using words, and I knew that I could say better than I could paint what I wanted people to feel.
Chanson de Harold is the book of poetry, The Richard Poems by Elizabeth Clayton, our guest on the program. Time is going by way too quickly, as it always does. Let's talk about some of the different poems that you have in the book, and it starts with the anticipatory sting. Maybe just tell us a little bit about the thought that went behind that, and then we'll talk about some of your favorites that show different emotions of different stages of this relationship.
The anticipatory sting comes in the last few months of his life, and I slept upstairs, and the sitters stayed with him at night, and I would go down. He would not let anyone make his breakfast but me, and I would go in and take it to him, and they would feed him. But when I would go to leave him, he would look at me. He was blind at that point, but he would look toward me. He could see a little bit of my hair. My hair is silver, and he could see a little of the white. And I could see in his eyes that I was saying goodbye to him again for the day, because I was still teaching, and I was saying goodbye, and I knew that he knew he was dying, and that I was saying goodbye, and it was shorter and shorter and shorter, and that was the anticipatory sting. I anticipated the death from the conclusiveness of his looking, he's staring at me when I left the room.
And so well stated and written in the poem, The Anticipatory Sting. How about The Strawberry Kiss? That was one of my favorites as I was reading
poem.
That. Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Richard and I so often were at odds with each other, so often, and he did things that would hurt me. And then after he became so ill and he knew he would not live, when he went somewhere, he would try to bring a little pretty, as my father used to say, to me. And he knew I liked fruit and things like that. And so he brought a little red strawberry, it was paper mache or something like that. And I was so pleased because he had never brought me anything, hardly ever. And it was just I only say at the end that it was so late. It was so late for these things to be happening. But
yes.
We had that.
It shows all the different stages, elements, emotions in the marriage. Thee is starts off, thee is the gentle ache in my heart's closeted part. Talk about the genesis of that poem.
Thee is, it was written actually for Richard, but it was written for several of the lovers that I had after his death. And when I date it, I usually put several dates on it. But thee is a biblical, is a King's English, word, but it connotes a very special sweetness. And that's what that poem is about, the sweetness I felt for him at the moment that I wrote it.
How about the poem, Oh Then? And you start by talking about the roses.
Yes,
and,
Oh Then.
Yes.
Oh Then didn't last very long, but I knew in retrospect that it did. It was a reality. We did have a love, and we did have a marriage, and that it ended, and that it was the way it was on a day-to-day basis, didn't matter. We did have it. It did exist. It was a reality.
How about the poem?
It was a beautiful thing.
Yes, and it comes across in the book. After the Winter is another poem that very impressive.
Yes, that's one of Resignation, actually, but not a bad resignation. After the winter, after all the grieving, after all the loss, after all the absence, I am satisfied.
And finally,
I'm satisfied with my aloneness. I'm satisfied with what I had. And this is really a part of maturity. This is part of growing up. This is part of accepting what life doles out to you. And I would like to have had a rose-covered cottage, I suppose, where we lived until we were both old and gray. Well, I'm already gray, but still, I didn't have him that long. But I think that there's a sense of satisfaction with it anyway. I'm satisfied where I am now.
And I'll go back to what I said before. As someone reading poetry, we five people could read it, maybe interpret it a little bit differently, interpret it in the context of their lives. And that's what's so nice about this, because we can all go back through your eyes, through your craft. We're able to tap into some of those emotions that we feel. The final poem I'll talk about is First Soul Apart. Talk
yes,
about
that. That is my summation.
Yes.
That is my summation. And if you will read it, it will say everything that I could say.
Yes, and it starts off, the morning sun brings a new greeting. That just, that sort of captures it all, doesn't it?
Yes.
That is in...
Every day you realize that you are alone and that he is somewhere else and that everything is beautiful as it always was and it always will be. But the grief is apart.
Yes.
The grief is set apart. First soul is apart.
You know, we tend to think of relationships in absolutes. We tend to think of a lot of things in absolutes. People in real life, though, are not all bad, not all good. Is that one of the takeaways you hope we have when we read your book?
I think so. If everything were all good or everything were all bad, life would be so simple. We would just do like Christ did. We would just separate the sheep from the goats.
Yes.
It wouldn't be that bad. But life is a mixture. Life has some of everything woven into it. And so what you do is you take the whole piece and you evaluate it and you take the good and you bind it to you and you take the bag and put it in a safe place where it does not hurt so badly. And after a while, you'll know that a gift has come to you. And the gift is that you are without deep grief.
It is always such a pleasure to have you with us. What are you working on now? I mentioned that you're working on all of your writings. Are you ready to release something
else? Well, I just finished some very small piece. It's called Jason's Paws. Jason is my third eldest nephew. He's a law instructor and an organist and a very fine young man. But he's my soul brother. He's not the son I never had, but he is my kin and my dear friend who understands my feelings. And so it's about the white hart in England, you know, the white deer.
Yes.
And the white deer is part myth and fable and all that, but some people say it does exist. Anyway, the book is a book of very short poems, very lovely, beautiful little poems. It's not very long. It has about 50 poems. And I did all the illustrations and the cover. The cover is a mixed medium piece. It's clay and oil and canvas and so forth. Anyway, it's a very pretty book. It's a very pretty book, but it celebrates the beauty of innocence and truth and good.
I am anxious to.
They're all one and the same.
I'm anxious to see that book and hopefully have an opportunity to talk about it. Such a varied professional career as an artist. There's so many different mediums, as we've talked about on the program. The book we talked about specifically tonight is the book Chanson. Hope I got that right. Chanson. All right, I told you, a long enough program, and I'm not going to bother repeating it. I'll spell it because I probably won't get it right again. De Herald, the Richard Poems by Elizabeth Clayton. The book is available. Of course, Amazon, all of Elizabeth's books are there. And if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to the Amazon site with all of the books. Elizabeth, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for making time to talk with us on the program. Look forward to having you back. It is always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray.
It is our pleasure. Elizabeth Clayton, our guest on the program. Her books are available at Amazon.com. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you can link on directly. We are back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.